she said, "Do you come from a land down under, where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover. Yeah. You better run, you better take cover."
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Cider Nation podcast, the unique baseball podcast. Brought to you by J. Birdie Baseball Company. Get your Canadian baseball apparel at jbirdie.ca and make sure to follow them on social media. Today, we have former White Sox sidearm right-handed pitcher Jack Hardy. Noel, thanks for coming on, Jack.
My pleasure. Appreciate you having me.
I guess first things first, could you talk to us a little bit about what sports looked like for you growing up?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I got into baseball pretty early, you know, T-ball. You know, played a little football. And, of course, there wasn't much on TV back in those days. I grew up in South Florida. So, really, my dad and I were both kind of Braves fans. Those were the only games that we could ever see on TV. Yeah, basically, it was just baseball, football, a lot of pickup games, you know, playing softball underneath the street lights at night, and, you know, pickup games at the fields, and, you know, turkey bowl games on Thanksgiving, a pickup football games. And, you know, I seemed to excel at baseball, so that's kind of what I stuck with the most. Of course, there were no travel teams back then, but baseball was just kind of my thing.
Yeah. And then I guess kind of more specifically baseball wise, like what did it look like for you, like kind of like recruiting wise and kind of college career wise?
Well, you know, I really wasn't highly touted by any schools really. I only had one offer to go to college. It was a Division II. You know, in high school, I was a third baseman. I was all county third baseman. Our team played, we won the district championship. I only pitched that game because, our ace, hurt himself. So I ended up having to pitch the last couple of games. I didn't really pitch much throughout the high school season, but, you know, I had a pretty good arm. I just really wasn't a pitcher much. So, because he got hurt, I ended up pitching the district championship game. We won it 1-0 in 10 innings. I pitched all 10 innings, threw nothing but fastballs. Then we went on to play in the, sectional tournament and ended up playing against, Tim Raines and his brother's team. And I ended up having to pitch that game as well. We ended up losing 4-0, but there was a coach from a Division II school that watched me pitch the district championship game, and he offered me a scholarship if I would become a pitcher. So it was kind of my only offer. I did have a look at University of Miami. I did go down there and get a tour. But they couldn't offer me any money, and I certainly couldn't afford to go to a private school like that. Mr. Frazier liked me, but he couldn't offer me any money. So I ended up going to a little small Division II school on a small scholarship. I think it was $500 the first semester for the first season. So there really weren't many offers. I wasn't highly touted by anybody. You know, I was just doing what I love to do, playing a little high school ball, and was fairly successful at it. And I only got the one offer at D2, and I took it.
Nice. And then I guess, you know, Jack, with it being Sidearm Nation, like, could you talk to us a little bit about kind of your arm slot story and kind of how that all came about?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, I threw overhand, even my first 5 years of pro ball. You know, okay. I was, I came out of, you know, I hurt my arm my junior year of college. And so I didn't get drafted my junior year. My senior year, I actually got cut from the team because I had dove for a ball in fall ball. I was playing center field. I used to play the outfield whenever I didn't pitch. and I tore ligaments in my left thumb, and I was in a cast, and we had a brand new coach, and he actually cut me from the team. So I ended up kind of actually begging him back on the team, which somehow he understood my plight. It was my last chance to get drafted. I was really only in college to go play ball, but he helped me back on the team. I ended up having a decent year, but my fastball went from like 92 to like 86. I never had surgery or anything. Don't know exactly what was wrong with my shoulder. Never saw a doctor. But anyway, so I ended up getting drafted after my senior year, 21st round. Went to rookie ball, did really, really well. Ended up going straight to double A from rookie ball. I never played A ball. Huh. So I pitched, 81, 82, 83, had surgery, 83, had a bone chip removed from my elbow, came back off of that, went and played in Mexico to get some innings, 84, 85, still throwing overhand, was struggling a little bit coming off the surgery. When I used to get ahead of guys like 02, I had a really good slider. My slider was my best pitch, good sinker. I was a pitcher, not a thrower. Didn't throw hard enough really to go by anybody at that point. So I had to learn how to really pitch on the edges and things like that. But when I used to get a guy 0-2, I used to just fool around and I'd kind of drop sidearm and I'd throw a sinker in and kind of, get him off the plate a little bit. And I'd throw what my teammates used to call the frisbee or the ass freezer. It was a big, hard, sweeping, I don't know how hard it was, but it was a big sweeping slider that broke about, three and a half feet. I mean, it broke a lot. And it would just freeze the righties. And my pitching coach, Nardi Contreras, decided, and he kind of threw it out there. He goes, maybe you should just start throwing like that all the time. So that's what I did. And that's kind of how I went to the sidearm thing. I really never practiced it. I used to just fool around playing catch. I never threw a bullpen throwing sidearm, until he decided that, my stuff really wasn't good enough throwing overhand anymore. I wasn't going to go anywhere. So I just kind of dropped kind of three quarter, not completely. I certainly wasn't a submarine pitcher. It was more of a three quarter thing.
Yep.
But that's kind of how it started. Huh.
When you dropped down there, Jack, like, did you lose any velo or from that standpoint?
Well, not really. Like I said, I was only throwing about 86 at the time, which was not, I mean, back then, if you threw 90, you were a star. I mean, our number one draft pick in 83, Joel Davis, threw like 90 and he was number one draft pick. Now that's nothing, of course, because times have changed. But, I could still throw 85, 86 sidearm.
Yep.
But the harder I threw it, the straighter it was. So I learned to take a little off, make sure I got on top of the ball and make sure that ball sinks. I was actually more effective with my sinker, throwing it more in the 82 to 84 range.
Yeah. And that's kind of like a common question I get asked all the time is like, how do I gain more velo from that slot? But like, same thing, 100%, like the harder I threw from there, like the further the ball was getting hit off of me. Like,
yeah, the straighter it was, the harder I tried to throw, the straighter it was. The only time I really tried to throw hard sidearm was when I was trying to go like up and in certain situation, trying to jam a righty or get it by him.
Yeah.
But 86 isn't getting by a whole lot of people unless it's in a really good spot.
Yeah. And I know this can be a kind of, everyone's different here, Jack, but like, case to case, but like, was there any mechanical tips that you found kind of helped you from the lower slot?
Well, I threw from the right side of the rubber. And that was good for righties, but not so good for lefties.
Yeah.
Really for me, it was more about staying on top of the rubber and getting a good push and standing tall, because the taller I stood when I went sidearm, the more I could get on top of the ball. It seemed like if I tried to drop down and bend more, that I got more under the ball and I didn't get the good sink I needed. So for me, really, it was just staying closed as long as possible and making sure I got on top of the ball.
And then I guess, Jack, what would be your favorite part about pitching from the lower arm slot?
Well, I guess the favorite part was I got so many really just horrible and bad swings from righties with my slider.
Yeah.
You know, I threw sidearm for my last 4 years and not one righty ever hit my slider for a home run.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, and that's kind of the next question, like, you know, how did you kind of combat, like, against this, you know, the opposite side hitter, right? I mean, that's where definitely, I was a lefty and I had to be careful. My slider was basically going right into that righty's bat path, but I could definitely get away with it against a lefty. Any advice from that standpoint?
Well, obviously, you have to have something that you can throw into a lefty that's not, that can stay off the barrel. Which is harder for, I think, for a side armor.
Yeah.
Of course, the slider is going right into them. So you either have to backdoor it or you got to make sure it's way in. So all they can do is pull a foul. Yeah. So you really have to be accurate with your slider in that aspect. The hardest thing for me was being on the right side of the rubber was to get the ball in on a lefty with movement. Because the more I pulled it, you know, glove side, kind of the less sink I got on it.
Yeah.
So I had no problem going in on righties because it was definitely going to sink. Anything arm side was definitely going to run and sink. But to get it done on the lefties, it was straighter. So sometimes that was a problem.
Did you ever play around, Jack, like with kind of positioning? Like, did you slide over to the left side of the rubber against a lefty or?
I thought about that many times over the last 33 years. I wish I had, but no, I never did. I stayed right where I always was. Didn't fool around with it.
Yeah.
I probably should have done that in hindsight. And then just gone back to the other side of the rubber against righties. Because I know if I stayed on the left side of the rubber, then my slider wasn't going to be as effective against righties.
Yeah.
But it would have helped me get the ball in on lefties with some better movement for sure.
And then, Jack, could you talk to us a little bit about your MLB debut?
That was in '89 in Comiskey. First day there, the White Sox obviously were struggling as a pitching staff. And my first game there, Long was the starting pitcher, I believe, and like in the fourth, he's already given up like 5 runs and I'm first one called. I got brought in, with first and second and, one out. And the first batter I faced, it was a right-handed batter. I induced a ground ball double play, ground ball third. They turned two. I'm out of the inning. Fantastic. Great start. So I go off in the next inning and the first batter I face, I get behind 3-1 and I just feed a fastball and it doesn't sink. It was in her half, didn't sink. Obviously, you know, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And he hit one that bounced off the top of the wall for a home run. So the first batter I faced, I induced a ground ball double play. The second batter I faced, I gave up a home run. And it happened to be Billy Ripken,
okay,
who is, you know, I think he might have had 7 big league home runs in his entire career, you know. So I kind of went from being really good to really bad really quick. It was I had the whole spectrum there very quickly. But then I got out of that inning, no problem. Then the next inning – I had a little bit of trouble. I got 2 outs. I think I walked a guy. I got Cal Ripken out the first time I faced him. We were playing the Orioles, obviously.
Yeah.
And then that third inning I was out there, I was facing Cal for the second time. I got him out the first time, ground ball to short. Second time I faced him, he hit a little soft line drive off my slider over the shortstop's head. So they pulled me out with bases loaded and two outs. And then they brought in a guy who gave up a bases clearing double to the gap that scored all three of my runs. And so I ended up giving four earned runs, which is what escalated my ERA to where it ended up staying for eternity.
Yeah, that's always kind of that tricky part. I always struggle with that. Like, I know it's part of the game, but like, I would rather give up those runs myself. But I know that's part of the game, of right?
But yeah. I let them on base, so that's the deal. Sometimes you get away with it, sometimes you don't. And just that time, absolutely. I didn't. But it was exciting to be there. Obviously, you know, I've been in pro ball for 9 years at that point, and
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I still, because, you know, I was never a prospect. I was one of those filler guys, yep. You got to fill the team around your prospects, you know, and I'd already been in AAA for, gosh, 5 or 6 years. You know, like I said, I never played AA. I mean, actually, I was in AAA my second year of pro ball. Like I said, I went straight to AA. I got called up for a start out in Phoenix, just for one start, and got sent right back. But, yeah, I was in AAA my last, 5 years, but it was an interesting time for sure. If, you know, to be there for 9 years and finally get the chance, you know, and I was dealing in Vancouver in '89, absolutely just lights out, and they needed somebody, and of course they pulled up this guy named Jose Segura, who was Latin and threw like 94 or 92 at the time. I forget. It was hard, way harder than me. He wasn't having near the season I was having, but they called him up rather than me. Yeah. And even though I was dealing. So, of course, I wasn't too happy about that, which we never are, because that's just part of the game, part of the politics, part of the business, you know. But, you know, he went up and was there 3 days, and he got rocked twice. And then that's the reason I got the call, because if he had gone up and done well, I would have never, ever seen the big leagues. So, you know, Don Paul, who was actually my roommate in Vancouver, he was in the big leagues. And then he's the one that went on the DL, what it was called back then. He went on the 15-day DL, and they called Segura up, and he was there 3 days, got rocked twice, sent him down. I got called up for the next 12 days. And then as soon as Don Paul came off the 15-day DL, I went back down. Yeah. So anyway, but I, you know, that was my ninth year with the White Sox. And I, you know, I finished a season. I don't know if you ever played in the Pacific Coast League, but it is the toughest pitcher's league there is. And that's what Vancouver was in. And I actually finished the season in '89. I was 7-0 with a 1.40 ERA in like 60 or 70 innings. And I did not get called up into the season.
No.
So that pretty much did it for me staying with the White Sox. So luckily I was a free agent and I had some other offers. So I was able to go somewhere else. But, you know, I got like one day in the big leagues almost for every year I played, which wasn't much, you know. So you talk about getting a cup of coffee. All I got was the cup. I didn't get any coffee poured into it.
Well, that's definitely, more than the average baseball player for sure, right? And, you know, with your grind in the minors, and definitely good on you for sticking with it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it was worth it, you know, for sure. Yeah. So I was doing what I like to do, you know, if I had known, the following year I went and played in the Rangers organization. So they gave me a better contract. They gave me a shot at big league camp, which the White Sox had never done. So they brought me into big league camp with the Rangers. So I was right there with, you know, Nolan Ryan and all those guys. And I knew I wasn't going to make their team because they were stacked pitching staff at the time. So I ended up going to Oklahoma City. That was my final year. didn't know it was going to be my final year because I came home and got a job at a place called Public Supermarkets. And the guy hired me full time, knowing I might be going back to play baseball. So I said, well, you know, I'll let you know as soon as I know. And he's like, look, if you decide to stay, I'll give you $1 an hour raise. So on Super Bowl Sunday, I had my girlfriend living with me at the time. And we went out and bought a golden retriever. It was Sunday morning before the game that night, obviously. And we went out and bought the golden retriever. And I went home and called my agent and said, you know, I have a responsibility to my dog. I retire from baseball. So if I had known there was going to be expansion in 2 years, I probably would have stuck around because I would have been like a really good right-handed specialist, which you know, they don't have those anymore. But, you know, I would have been a real good right-handed specialist because I was very effective against righties and struggled against lefties. I didn't really have a good out pitch. I didn't have a good changeup to combat something going down and away to the lefties. I just didn't have a good one. So I had a bad accident when I was a kid. Half of my right hand is actually numb, the pinky and the ring finger. So I really couldn't throw a conventional, like, okay change or anything like that. And that doesn't really work from sidearm anyway so much. But, I just never had a good one. Anyway, I mean, you know, I had a pretty good career, played 10 years. I never got released by anybody. And nice. I quit on my own. I just think I might have had a little bit more time if I stuck it out. But, you know, I knew I was never going to have that Roger Clemens contract, you know. So yeah. That's just the way it was.
Well, and you mentioned Vancouver there, Jack. Like, I guess I'm from Calgary. I'm definitely familiar with, you know, the Cannons and went to a bunch of games. Like, do you remember pitching in Calgary?
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah. Calgary and Edmonton, right? Those were the other two in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, I actually met my wife in Vancouver.
Okay. Nice.
She's actually flying back from Vancouver as we speak.
There you go.
She was just up there selling her father's townhouse. He had a little medical issue a couple months ago, and they had to put him in a assisted living facility. So they closed on the townhouse yesterday, and she's flying back today. I have a funny little story about that. You know, her father is Ozzy Chavarria. I don't know if you've ever heard that name, being from Canada.
I've definitely heard the name, for sure.
Yeah, well, he played 2 years in the major leagues.
Okay.
He actually umpired in the Olympics for Canada. So he's been very active in the Vancouver area, coaching and umpiring. And he actually played in Vancouver. And that's actually how he met my wife's mother. So he met my wife's mother, his wife, at Nat Bailey Stadium. His wife, my mother-in-law, who is now deceased, she's 10 years younger than Ozzy is. So I was sitting out in the bullpen in Vancouver in 1988, and here comes this girl selling 50-50 tickets. So I kind of, you know, liked the way she looked, caught my eye, and I ended up being in the stands charting a game a couple of days later, and she came by selling 50-50 tickets. So I struck up a conversation. I end up, you know, getting a date with her, and come to find out that she is 10 years younger than me. And I met her at Nat Bailey Stadium, and now she's my wife and the mother of my two kids.
Yeah, that, it's interesting how that works, eh?
It was kind of meant to be.
That sounds like it. Yep.
That's the way I looked at it.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
She's a great lady. The best decision I ever made, for sure. And you know, I tell all my friends that are single, I said, if you want to go find a good woman, you go to Vancouver. No doubt. So I love Vancouver. Vancouver was beautiful. I played in Hawaii in 87. That's actually the last year they had a professional team out there. It was 1987. Played for the Hawaii Islanders.
Okay. Yep.
And I actually liked Vancouver more than Hawaii. And not just because I met my wife there, but just overall experience. Vancouver was a much better place to be, much funner place to be than Hawaii.
Nice.
Hawaii was beautiful, but Vancouver was fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Hawaii, the locals don't support the team. You know, we played in Aloha Stadium that holds like 70,000 people, where they play the NFL All-Star game forever.
Yeah.
And they have like, you know, 1,200 fans, you know. So there was a lot to do there, very scenic, but the whole environment was different. Hmm.
Yeah, unfortunately, Calgary, like, you know, I played indie ball in Calgary. That was kind of, you know, especially after the Cannons left, the city didn't necessarily support indie ball quite the same as they did the Cannons. But there's nothing right now at that field, unfortunately. And at least Edmonton has a college summer team that's being supported pretty well. And I know Vancouver has the Jays, whatever, single A. But yeah, it's kind of unfortunate to see.
Yeah, Calgary's beautiful. I used to always, because of course I was a pitcher, a relief pitcher.
Yep.
I started my first few years until the arm surgery and everything, but I was a reliever my last, you know, five years or so. But I used to always take my golf clubs to Calgary, because yep, one of my favorite golf courses to play is Kananaskis.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a nice course.
And we used to, every time, both years we went there, both times we went there, I took my clubs and we'd hop in a van and make the drive and go play the course up there. It's beautiful.
Nice. Well, and then that was kind of my next question there, Jack, like from a relief pitcher standpoint, like any advice as far as like, you know, getting warm or getting hot to get in the game?
Well, I think that's obviously an individual thing. Some people take longer than others.
Yeah.
You know, I was a guy that was, you know, because of my arm slot, you know, I could throw multiple days in a row. Wasn't quite as much stress on the shoulder because you weren't throwing overhand.
Yep.
And could get loose pretty quick. But I would say, you know, obviously you need to know your body and know how much time you need to get ready quick, because some people can be ready in, you know, 8-10 pitches. Other people take 20 or 30. So, you know, for me, it was more about just, you know, when it got to be about that time when you might be called on, was, you know, getting up, moving around, get the blood flowing, stretching, you know, getting the arm as best prepared ahead of time as possible without actually throwing a pitch.
Yeah, that definitely, looking back at it, I had a bad habit of probably throwing too many bullets, right? And kind of forgetting about even just the eight that you get on the actual mound, right? And just probably wasted a lot of pitches there.
Yeah, it can happen. I mean, we had a guy that was from Dominican that, I mean, when I watch him throw on the side or get ready to go in a game or a bullpen, I don't know how anyone ever hit this guy. He was that good, had that good a movement, short little guy, not big at all, but had no matter where his body you touched him, was like hitting a rock. He was just so strong, but he'd get out there in the games and just get rocked. I couldn't understand it. He was looked so good in the bullpen. I don't know if it was, of course, there's no batter in the box when you're throwing a bullpen or, you know, out in the pen getting loose to come in the game. But, you know, he would throw a lot of pitches in the bullpen, to your point. And, you know, maybe that had something to do with it, that he just kind of wore himself out too quick. I mean, you know, I could throw 6-8 pitches in the bullpen. I'm ready to go because I know I'm getting 8 more out there. So that's all I needed. Some people need more than that. So You know, you have to know what you need to know how to prepare to be ready to go in.
Yeah. And then, Jack, did you have any teammates that were sidearm submarine pitchers?
Actually, yes. I had two. When I was in Vancouver, actually, I was in Glens Falls, New York, my first year of Double A.
Okay.
There was a guy named Bro Teich. Now, he was really underhand. He was way more under than I was.
More submarine.
But yeah. I was throwing overhand at that time. I was a starting pitcher throwing overhand. That was my second year of pro ball.
Gotcha.
So he was the first one I ever saw.
Yeah.
That threw that way. But he was a bit of a party animal. Let me tell you, I can tell some stories about that guy. Some bus trips. He actually lived in the same development as us. But anyway, we won't go into those personal things.
That's fair.
But yeah, Bro Teich was one. And then there was a guy. I only ever had one other guy on my team that threw that way. And that was in 90 with the Rangers in Oklahoma City. And that was Kurt Walker.
Okay.
Kurt Walker threw sidearm like me, and he had a really good changeup. I was jealous of his changeup, man. God, that guy could throw a good changeup. I just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, I struggled from that. I had a really good one over the top, but I struggled from the lower slot for sure.
Yeah, I had a really good three-finger changeup from over the top.
Yeah,
I had the curveball and the slider and all that. I couldn't throw the kind of the okay because of my my hand situation with my right hand from the. You know, when I was a kid, I went through a sliding glass door and I had over 2,000 stitches. And, you know, my left leg from the knee down is somewhat numb. And my right hand, those outside two fingers are numb. So I had to throw like the three finger. You know, sidearm, I just couldn't do it. And it was very difficult to come up with a decent off-speed pitch. You know, it's hard to go out there with just two pitches.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to be effective, especially more than once through the lineup.
Yeah.
With only two pitches you can throw for a strike. I could hardly ever throw my changeup sidearm for a strike.
Yeah.
But it was tough.
I ended up kind of dropping down a little bit lower on my changeup. I mean, I really only kind of threw it against the opposite side hitter, and maybe I gave it away at times, but yeah, that's kind of what I found more effective. But I even then, it was probably struggling just to get a feel for it.
Oh, you were a lefty, right?
I was a lefty. Yeah.
Yeah, I never saw a lefty sidearm in all my years. But there's plenty of them around now. You watch college baseball now, and like every team's got a sidearm. Everyone.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them got one from both sides.
Yeah.
You know. So that's just kind of the way it is now. And,
and it's kind of funny, right? Like the way the game is going velocity, but there's still going to be a need for a guy who's, you know, like that in the bullpen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it pays to have somebody who's a little funky, you know,
yeah.
You know, cause the hitters don't see a lot of people that come out of that arm slot or that angle. You see a lot of lefties now that throw sidearm. Some guys even, you know, do what I was doing. They were throwing overhand most of the time and then just going sidearm every once in a while.
Yep, for sure.
Because, you know, that lefty on lefty match, when you got a lefty coming up the left side of rubber, throwing, you know, crossfire against his body. I mean, the slider starting behind you, which is kind of why my teammates used to call my slider the ass freezer, because I would throw it right at the rear end of a right-handed hitter. And it would end up off the plate, you know. So it just broke so much, it was really hard to barrel up hard. You know, I sort of gave up some hits on it, but just never any home runs because it was just so hard to barrel up. Because, you know, they didn't see any pitchers like me. So it was a real advantage for me at that time to throw the way I did because, you know, they didn't see anybody like me. So they had nothing to go off of. They couldn't make the adjustments quick enough.
Nice. And then, Jack, what does baseball look like for you now? Are you doing any coaching or?
Not anymore. I had, I had two boys and I coached my older one for many years. My younger one, I never really coached because he never listened. He wouldn't, you know, my father actually gave him a nickname of I Know. So no matter what you said to him, he would say, I know. And he wouldn't listen to me. So I refused to waste my time to coach him because he wouldn't listen to anything I said anyway. And he still doesn't to this day. And he's 22. So anyway, but my older son, who wasn't near as talented as his younger brother, I ended up coaching him in some little bit of travel ball with the Cobras down out of Pembroke Pines, Fort Lauderdale area. And he ended up getting a scholarship to college, went all 4 years to NSU, which is Nova Southeastern University. They won the national championship his junior year. And then after his senior year, he got signed, not drafted. He was a little upset. He didn't get drafted after his senior year. So I took him out to play golf the next day to get his mind off of it. But he got a phone call from the Brewers, and he signed with them, and he played for them for 5 years. He just got released this spring training. He went up one level every year with them. He started off in, you know, the instructional league or whatever they call it now. And then he went to A ball, then he went to high A, then he went to double A, then he went to triple A. He never spent more than 1 year at any level. He went up one level every year, which is really, I mean, really good for a undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
You know, 5'10 righty throwing 92, 93, you know. But he played for Team Panama in the World Baseball Classic this past spring. He played winter ball in Puerto Rico. He played winter ball in Australia. Really good. Really good pitcher. But, you know, 5'10", throwing 93 today is not getting you much of a look. So they released him, and he pretty much has given up the game now. He's got a real job, started a new career, and doing his own thing.
Did he ever think about dropping down? Or
No, absolutely not. No chance. That's not as effective today as it was back 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Or more, because all these hitters see a bunch of those guys now.
No, it's true.
So it's not really foreign to them anymore. You know, it's not as big a deal. It's not as troublesome to those hitters, you know. Yeah. He had some really good numbers at times where you thought he'd be that guy getting called up. But, you know, of course, it was the other guys who were high draft picks, and you know, the guys who were 6'5", throwing 98. Those are the guys that get the chance these days. Not the righty, just filling a spot on the roster, you know, throwing 93.
You know how to pitch.
I mean, he played in Nashville last year. In her first half of the season, he had a 90% ground ball rate off his sinker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, really good. Really good sinker, really good slider. I taught him when he was young because he was a punching Judy. So I taught him the slider really young, and that's what got him as far as it did. But, you know, his little brother was, you know, 6'3", throwing 92 in high school, you know, scouts at every one of his games. And I didn't even let him start pitching until his junior year. He was a shutdown catcher, you know, batting fourth, hitting home runs. He's a stud, even from a young age. He always played up, but all kinds of D1 offers. They were going to draft him. And, of course, coming out of high school is your best leverage. So, of course, the scouts all want to know, what's your number for him not to go to college? You know, so I gave him a number so high that they would not draft him in the second round. Because he wasn't a, he really wasn't a, hadn't been pitching for very long. And they all wanted him as a pitcher because he projected to be something really good. But all kinds of D1 offers. He went off to college, went to one semester, came home and said, I don't like baseball. I don't like school. And he quit everything. So yeah. I have one overachiever. I have one underachiever.
And then, Jack, it's just time for our ninth inning call to the bullpen. So just going to be some random questions just to learn a little bit more about you.
Okay.
Favorite NHL team?
Well, I don't follow hockey at all, so I guess I would have to. I mean, I grew up in South Florida, so I have been to a couple of Panthers games.
Yep.
I would have to say the Vancouver Canadiens because my wife's from there. That's where she grew up.
Yep.
And that's the team that she follows.
Nice. Favorite travel destination?
Mine is Costa Rica because I'm a big offshore fisherman.
Yep. All-time favorite professional wrestler?
Oh, that's got to be, probably Dusty Rhodes. That elbow was mean.
That was, yeah, I
remember that. Probably before your time, but.
Favorite baseball movie of all time?
Well, I guess Field of Dreams.
Yep. And then, Jack, these next three questions, it's just going to be kind of like if you could take anyone dead or alive. And the first one is just to an MLB baseball game to go watch in the stands.
Anyone dead or alive I could go watch a game with?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to go watch a game with my father, who was my best friend, but he's been gone for a while now.
Yep. And then for a round of golf.
Again, I'd like to play with my father because we played a lot of golf together.
Yeah, yeah.
He was my best friend.
Yep. Any particular course?
Well, I would like to play golf with my father at Pebble Beach because I haven't played Pebble Beach yet. That's on my bucket list.
Nice.
But we never played it together. He's played it. He's actually played Augusta twice, which is really hard to get on. But that's only because the founder of the company that my father worked for, Public Supermarkets, was a member there. So my dad got the privilege of playing there twice.
Nice. And then the last one would be just, you know, to go to the bar for, you know, have a beverage or a drink with.
I think I'd like to go do that with Brooks Robinson.
Okay. Yep. And then, Jack, if you could be an Olympian in any sport other than baseball, summer or winter, what sport would you like to do?
Oh, let's see. I guess that would be golf.
Yeah, golf's in the Olympics now. Absolutely.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
Or ping pong. I used to be pretty good, but not Olympic kind of
game. Not Olympic.
No.
Yeah. No, same here. I'm clubhouse good, but not Olympic.
Yeah, clubhouse good. I was a college champ. My kids still can't beat me, but yeah, the Olympics, I got no chance. I've seen that. I played in the I used to work for Public Supermarkets, like I mentioned, and
and
I used to play in the Jason Taylor ping pong smash every year because Publix was the major sponsor for him because he played for the Dolphins and Publix is big in Florida.
Okay.
And so for 10 straight years, I was put into that because the people who make the decisions of the store managers or district manager, whoever's going to go play to represent Publix, and there would only be two or three of us, they always picked me to go do that because they knew I was pretty good at ping pong. So anyway, so, and I played with Zach Thomas. He was my partner. They played partners.
Okay.
And there was this one guy there every year, this Oriental guy, that whoever they put him with, whatever Dolphin player he got, they still won. The guy was that good. He was just so good. It was just nobody could touch him. So they actually stopped letting him play in the tournament because he was so good. He won it every year. And he actually would run a school before the actual tournament started for the kids. Whenever Zach Thomas was there, and he was only there three times out of the 10 years that I was there, we got first place one time and third place twice. And the two third places was when that Oriental guy was still there playing and nobody could beat him. But if I didn't get Zach Thomas as my partner, I couldn't get out of our bracket because there's a commentator down there named Joe Rose. He used to play for the Dolphins, and he used to bring this girl with him. And we were always in the same field. They had like four brackets. We were always in the same bracket against Joe Rose and this ex-professional tennis player. And if I had any other Dolphin player behind Zach Thomas, we could not beat those two. But if I had Zach, who could at least get the ball back, then we could beat him. We beat him. We beat him every time that I had Zach and I as a partner. But the rest of the Dolphin players all sucked except for Zach. Zach was halfway decent. And if I had him, we made it to the playoffs. But you know, that guy was really good at that. Oriano guy was really good at ping pong. He just, you know, brought me to my knees. It's like, oh, I'm garbage compared to what he could do.
And then lastly, Jack, just on that 1990 Oklahoma team, do you remember your teammate who was, you know, he was an outfielder, first baseman from Enderby, BC, Canada?
Who was an outfielder that was Canadian on that team?
Maybe slash first baseman. Kind of a big power hitting lefty.
Oh, gosh.
Or left-handed bat.
God, I'm so bad with names. Oh, no. I just remember freaking Berger, man, doing that Chris Berman nickname stint that we did that was actually aired on ESPN.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I have a copy of it somewhere on the computer. He did this whole ESPN nickname things. Gosh, I'm sure I'll know if I hear the name, but I do not remember the name, though.
Kevin Reimer?
Oh, yeah. Good old Rhymes. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Nice.
Absolutely. Of course I remember Kevin. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I got to pitch against him in like a, you know, a semi-pro kind of senior men's tournament. I think he, you know, it was like 2000, just when he kind of got, I think, finished with baseball in his hometown. So that was definitely an entertaining game to pitch against him.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. He was a big power hitter for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my roommate in Oklahoma City in 90 was Wayne Rosenthal.
Okay.
He ended up getting the big leagues for a little bit. And then he was a pitching coach like for the Marlins for a while as well. So
nice.
But I remember good old Berger. That was funny. That was funny. We were trying to give him a hot foot. You know, we had the paper in his shoe, but it was so windy. Oklahoma City, the wind's crazy there.
Okay.
And so here we are filming this thing. Everyone had to walk up and give him their ESPN Chris Berman nickname that they all came up with. And mine was Party Hardy or Don't Party at All. But here we are trying to light his foot on fire, but we couldn't get – the lighter wouldn't work because it was so darn windy. So I was one of the guys that tried. It's on the video, but we never could get it. So that's the way it goes.
She said, do you come from a land down under where women glow and men plunder? Can't you hear the thunder? Yeah. You better run, you better take cover. Yeah. You better run, you better take cover.